Stop, Go, Stop, episode 190, Sitting with Someone. What a night. It was a Friday night, and my friends and I had plans to meet up at a field party just outside town. One of the guys, Jimmy, had a beat-up old Chevy that barely ran, but it was our ride for the night. We loaded up a cooler, nothing crazy, just enough to feel like we were living it up, grabbed some lawn chairs, and headed out. Not even halfway there, the truck's radiator blew. Steam everywhere. We were stuck on the side of a gravel road with no cell phones back then to call for help. Just us, the stars, and a truck that was going nowhere. Luckily, I'd been working with my dad long enough to know my way around an engine. We waited for the radiator to cool down, dumped whatever water bottles we had into it, and prayed it'd get us moving. It sputtered and groaned, but it ran, at least for about 2 miles before it finally gave out for good. At that point, we had two choices: hike back to town or flag someone down. Of course, the first car that came by was Jimmy's older brother, who had no intention of letting us off easy. He made us sit in the bed of his truck while he took the longest route back home, stopping at every gas station just to embarrass us in front of whoever was hanging around. By the time we got back, word had already spread, and we never heard the end of it. That night taught me a couple things. Always check your radiator, never trust Jimmy's truck, and that sometimes the best memories come from when things don't go as planned. The people who come through my bar are a mix of old friends, regulars who've been coming in since my dad ran the place, and new faces just passing through. Big Mike, he's a retired welder, built like a brick wall, and has a story for everything. Half of them are probably exaggerated, but we let him have his fun. Janet, who comes in a couple times a week after her shift at the hospital, she's tough as nails, but she's got a soft spot for country music and always makes sure everyone gets home safe. Ronnie and Dave, old-timers who used to work at the John Deere plant, they argue about sports, politics, and the price of beer like it's their full-time job. Doesn't matter what the conversation is, one of them always thinks the other is full of it. We also get a younger crowd on weekends. Guys in their 20s looking to unwind. Sometimes college kids from across the river. They bring a little energy, but they know to keep it respectful, or they won't last long. Every now and then, someone new comes in, just looking for a cold beer and a little conversation. Some stick around and become part of the bar's rhythm. Others just pass through. Either way, everyone's got a story, and if you sit here long enough, you'll hear them all. COVID changed a lot of things, and the bar wasn't an exception. Before, this place was always packed on weekends, with regulars belly up to the bar, live music every now and then, and people just stopping in after work for a drink and a little conversation. When the shutdowns hit, everything came to a halt, and for the first time in my life, the doors were locked for more than just a holiday. I had to get creative to keep things running. We did to-go beers and cocktails, which felt strange, but it helped. A few of the old regulars would call in just to chat, checking in on the bar like it was a family member. When things finally opened back up, it wasn't the same right away. Some folks never came back. Either moved on, got too used to drinking at home, or just didn't feel safe being out. Nowadays, things have mostly settled, but it's different. Weeknights are quieter, and people don't stay as long as they used to. Some of the younger crowd still comes through, but they drink less, and there's more scrolling on phones than actual talking. Prices on everything, beer, liquor, even bar snacks, have gone up, which means I have to charge more, and that doesn't sit well with everybody. But the heart of the place is still the same. The regulars still show up, we still swap stories, and there's still a place for anyone who wants to pull up a stool and unwind. It's just a little different now. Maybe a little slower, maybe a little more appreciated. Thank you. My favorite TV show? For a classic show, I would say Cheers. Yeah, I know it's the obvious choice for a guy who owns a bar, but there's something about it that just feels right. The whole idea of a place where everybody knows your name, that's what a good bar should be. I like the mix of characters, the back and forth banter, and the way they make the bar feel like more than just a business. It's a second home, a place where people belong. Plus, Sam Malone is a guy I can respect, former ball player turned bar owner, knows how to handle his customers, and doesn't take himself too seriously. Other than that, I'll throw on Yellowstone every now and then. Something about a bunch of tough, stubborn guys fighting to hold on to what's theirs just hits home. I'd say I see a little of myself in Rip Wheeler, loyal to a fault, doesn't say much unless it needs saying, and isn't afraid to do what has to be done. He's got a no-nonsense way of handling things, which I respect. As for living that life, I won't lie, there's something appealing about it. Wide open land, working with your hands. No nonsense from outsiders trying to take what's yours. It's a simple but hard life, and I respect that. But truth be told, I've spent my whole life in this town, running this bar, and it's in my blood just like that ranch is in theirs. I think the big difference is that they're fighting to keep a way of life alive out on that ranch, while I'm doing the same thing here in my own way. I might not be herding cattle or running off land developers, but keeping this bar going, keeping my dad's legacy alive, is my own kind of Yellowstone. Yeah, it's been rough. The cost of everything has gone up. Beer, liquor, even the damn napkins. Suppliers keep raising prices, and I've had to pass some of that on to customers, which I hate doing. Some folks understand, but others just don't come in as much anymore. People aren't drinking like they used to either. Used to be a guy would come in after work, have a few beers, maybe a burger if we had the grill going. Now they come in, have one beer, and call it a night. I get it. When gas and groceries cost more, the bar tab is the first thing to go. Some nights it's just a couple of the old-timers nursing drinks and talking about the same stories I've heard 100 times. Weekends are better, but even then, it's not like it was before COVID. Younger crowds still come through, but they drink less. And a lot of them are more into seltzers and cocktails than beer and whiskey. I've thought about shaking things up, maybe bringing in a pool league, hosting more live music, or even doing some kind of food specials. But it's tough when every extra thing costs money. I keep the doors open, keep the lights on, and hope that the right mix of regulars and new faces keep this place going. It's not all doom and gloom, though. The bar is still here, and as long as I've got the keys, I'll do what I can to keep it that way. When your past is too painful, you do what you can to carry it without letting it drown you. Some people try to forget, but that never really works. Memories have a way of creeping back when you least expect them. Instead, I've learned to live with mine. For me, I cope by keeping busy, running the bar, making sure my girls have what they need, keeping my hands and mind occupied. If I sit still too long, that's when the weight of it sneaks up. Some nights when the bar's closed and it's just me locking up, I'll let myself think about the past. My dad, the divorce, all the things I might have done differently. I pour myself a drink, sit in the quiet, and let it come. I don't let it stay too long, though. At some point, you have to stand up, turn out the lights, and keep moving forward. Talking helps, but I'm not much for spilling my guts. I've got a couple old friends who know me well enough to understand. Without me having to say much. Sometimes, just sitting with someone who's been through their own share of pain is enough. At the end of the day, you don't outrun the past, but you can decide not to let it control you. You take it a day at a time, find reasons to laugh, and focus on what's in front of you, not just what's behind. I see myself as a guy who's been here his whole life. just doing his part to keep things going. My bar isn't some fancy place, but it's a staple. People know it, and they know me. I'm not one of those big shot business owners with money to throw around, but I take care of my regulars, sponsor a little league team when I can, and make sure folks have a place to gather. People know me as the guy who inherited the bar from my dad, the guy who's always behind the counter, the guy who doesn't say much unless it needs saying. I may not be a politician or a community leader, but I like to think the bar gives people a sense of belonging that counts for something. The bar keeps the lights on and food on the table, but some months are tighter than others. Used to be a guy could run a business like this and make a decent living without worrying too much. These days, between rising costs, fewer people drinking out, and the usual headaches of running a small business, it's a constant balancing act. My retirement plan, working until I can't anymore. I drive a truck that runs well but isn't new, and I don't take vacations. Most of my money goes toward keeping the bar open and making sure my girls have what they need. I've got a roof over my head and a business to call my own. But I'm not sitting easy either. I work hard, and I hope it's enough to keep things steady. That's about as good as it gets these days. Yeah, prom night. One of those memories that sticks with you, but not for the reasons you'd hope. I went with a girl named Jessica, Jessica Hendricks. We weren't really dating, but we'd known each other forever, and neither of us wanted to go alone. She was sweet, always smiling, the kind of girl everybody liked. We had a good time, danced a little, took the pictures, did the whole thing, but my mind was on what came after. Like most kids that night, we had plans to hit a party out by the river once prom wrapped up. That's where Jimmy comes in. He was one of my best friends, wild as hell. The kind of guy who could make you laugh even when you didn't want to. We all met up after prom and did what high school kids do. Drank, told stories, felt like we owned the world. Jimmy left before I did, said he was fine to drive. We didn't think twice about it. We should have. He never made it home. His truck went off the road about a mile outside of town, hit a ditch, and flipped. He was gone. I remember getting the call early the next morning. Everything from the night before felt like it happened a lifetime ago. One minute we were all invincible, and the next, one of us was gone. That night changed me. It made me think about choices, about how fast things can turn. About how none of us are as untouchable as we like to believe. I still think about Jimmy when I hear certain songs or when some kid at the bar talks about driving home after too many beers. I don't give big speeches, but when I see someone making the same mistake, I make sure they don't leave with their keys. Jessica and I kissed that night. But you know, when I think of that night, I don't think about what could have been. It's all the grief that followed us the rest of that year. Jessica, she got out of this town. I hear she is in Ohio, maybe Cleveland. She's got a good life, from what I hear. I wish I could say that losing Jimmy kept me from ever making that mistake, but life doesn't always work like that. Back then, I thought I was different. That I could handle it, that I wasn't as reckless as he was. Turns out that was just me lying to myself. The night I got my DUI, things had already been rough in my marriage. The bar was taking up too much of my time, and when I was home, I wasn't really there. We fought a lot, mostly about money, about the hours I worked, about how I was never around. That night I stayed too long after closing, had too many. And convinced myself I could make it home. Cops thought otherwise. It was the final straw for my wife. She'd already been losing faith in me, and that just sealed it. Looking back, I don't blame her. I let her down, let myself down, and worst of all, I knew better. So, how do I square it? I don't, really. I live with it. I own it. I can't go back and undo it. But I can make damn sure I don't make the same mistake again, whatever it takes. After the DUI, everything started falling apart fast. The marriage was already done for. But losing my license, the embarrassment, the financial hit, it all piled up. And instead of dealing with it the right way, I went the other direction. Meth was everywhere back then, especially in bars like mine, and it didn't take much to fall into it. At first, it was just a way to keep going. Long nights, early mornings, numbing everything I didn't want to face. But it doesn't stay just a little for long. It didn't take much time before I wasn't myself anymore. I was angry, paranoid, burning through money, and making stupid decisions left and right. Lost a lot of good people in my life because of it. My ex didn't want me around the girls when I was using, and I don't blame her for that either. What saved me was my dad. He'd already been sick, and I think seeing him fading like that made me realize how much time I was wasting, how much I was throwing away. He didn't lecture me, didn't shame me. He just told me straight, you either get your act together or you lose everything. And I mean everything. That was enough. I cleaned up. It wasn't easy. And there were nights I wanted to slip back into it, but I fought through. I got help, went through the worst of it, and climbed out. It's been years now, and I haven't touched the stuff since. I still think about it sometimes, not in a craving way, but just as a reminder. I know where that road leads, and I'm never going back. The girls are the biggest reason. They need a dad who's here, not some ghost of himself chasing the next high. So, yeah, I had a problem, but I beat it, and I'll keep beating it every damn day. I'm not much of a reader these days, but if I had to pick, I'd say Lonesome Dove by Larry McMurtry. There's something about that story that just sticks with you. Two old cowboys, Gus and Call, trying to hold on to a way of life that's fading, pushing forward even when the world's changing around them. It's about loyalty, loss, and the kind of friendships that run deeper than blood. I see a lot of myself in Call. Quiet, stubborn, keeps everything bottled up. But deep down, he cares more than he lets on. And Gus, well, he's the kind of guy I wish I could be sometimes. Always got a story, never afraid to live. My favorite part of Lonesome Dove has to be when Gus dies. It's not because I like seeing him go, but because of what it meant about friendship, about promises, and about the weight of the past. Gus always had this way of making things seem lighter, even when they weren't. He lived the way he wanted, laughed easy, and never let the world make him bitter. But when he gets wounded and refuses to let them take his leg, you know it's the end. He'd rather die as himself than live as half a man. That kind of stubborn pride, I get it. What really sticks with me, though, is Call keeping his promise to Gus, hauling his body all the way back to Texas because that's what Gus wanted. Most people wouldn't do that, but Call does, because that's the kind of man he is. He doesn't say much, doesn't show a lot of emotion, but he carries out that promise because that's what loyalty looks like. That whole journey back, Call is alone with his thoughts, with nothing but regret and memories. It's painful, but it's real. The way McMurtry writes it, you can feel the dust, the emptiness, the weight of everything that's been lost. It's not just about Gus. It's about the end of something bigger, the end of an era, the way time moves on, whether you're ready or not. That part of the book hits home for me, makes me think about my own past, my old man, the things I carry that no one else sees. Call never really knows how to say what he feels, but you can see it in the way he acts. I understand that. Some things you just live with. My brother. Yeah, that's right. I have a twin brother. His name's Danny, and yeah, he's out in California now. Last time we talked, probably about a year ago, maybe a little more. It wasn't much. Just a quick check-in, seeing how the girls were, him telling me about his job, the usual, He's got a whole different life out there, works in tech or something like that, makes good money, has a nice house, all that. We used to be close, but once he left Iowa, things changed. Danny always wanted out of this town. He was the smart one, the one with big dreams. Went to college, got out as soon as he could, and never looked back. I stayed, ran the bar, took care of Dad when he got sick. No regrets there. I did what I had to do. He doesn't get my life, and I don't get his. Doesn't mean I don't love him, but it's hard to keep up when we're in such different worlds. Every now and then, I think about calling him, but then I figure if he wanted to talk, he'd call me too. Maybe one day we'll find our way back to being brothers like we used to be. Yeah, he did. I know it sounds like a soap opera, but Danny and my ex, not while we were together, but still, it stung. After the divorce, I was a mess. Drinking too much, making bad choices, just trying to get through each day. Danny had always been the fixer, the one who tried to keep things smooth. And I guess somewhere in that, he and Lisa got close. Maybe it started as him just being there for her. Maybe it was more than that from the start. I never asked, and I don't want to know. I found out through someone else, not even from him. That was the real kicker. He called me afterward, tried to explain, said it wasn't planned, that he didn't mean to hurt me. I didn't say much. What was there to say? The damage was done. They didn't last long. 6 months, maybe a little more. She moved on, and he eventually left for California. But it put a crack between us that never really healed. We were already going down different roads, and that just made it easier to let the distance grow. I don't sit around dwelling on it anymore. But yeah, it still lingers. Some betrayals, even the unintentional ones, don't just fade away. Last time I saw Lisa was a few weeks ago. She dropped the girls off at the bar before I took them for the weekend. We don't talk much beyond what's necessary. Schedules, school stuff, doctor's appointments. It's mostly short, to the point. Civil, but not exactly friendly. It's been years since the divorce, but there's still this unspoken tension. Not the kind where we fight, we're past that, but the kind where there's too much history to ever be comfortable around each other. Too many things left unsaid. Too many things that can't be taken back. She's moved on, I guess. Not married. But I know she's dated. I don't ask questions. Not my business. Me? Well, I've been stuck in the same routine since she left, and she probably knows that. Maybe she pities me for it. Maybe she doesn't think about me at all. When I see her, there's this moment, just a flicker, where I remember what it used to be like, when we were young and stupid and thought we had it all figured out. And then it's gone, and we go back to being two people with a past and two kids. Tying us together. It is what it is. We do what's best for the girls. That's all that matters now. My oldest, 14, Emma, she's got Lisa's fire. Stubborn as hell, smart, always got a comeback ready. She sees the world in black and white, just like her mom used to. Thinks she knows everything already, and maybe she does, at least more than I did at her age. She's got Lisa's sharp eyes, too, the kind that don't miss much. Sometimes when she argues with me, it's like I'm right back in those old fights with her mother, and I have to remind myself she's just a kid trying to figure things out. My youngest, 10, Sophie, she's got Lisa's kindness, softer, more open-hearted. She wants to fix things, make everyone happy, just like her mom did back when we were young. She's got Lisa's smile, too, the one that could light up a room when she let it. Sophie's the one who still grabs my hand when we cross the street, still curls up next to me on the couch without thinking twice. I see a lot of who Lisa used to be in her, the Lisa before life got complicated. It's strange, you know, seeing pieces of someone you loved and lost living on in your kids. Some days it makes me miss her, not in a I want her back way, but in a man, we really had something once way. Other days, it just makes me grateful that No matter what happened between us, we made two damn good kids together. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. Emma hasn't officially started dating, not that she's told me anyway, but I'm not stupid. She's at that age where boys are definitely on her radar. And I'm sure she's on theirs. I've seen the way she texts with that little smirk, the way she cares way too much about what she's wearing some days. And if I bring it up, she just rolls her eyes and says, "Dad, stop being weird. Lisa and I haven't really talked about it yet, but I know it's coming. She'll probably be the first to know when it happens. Emma talks to her about that stuff more than she does me. I get it. What 14-year-old girl wants to talk about boys with her dad? Still stings a little, though. I don't like the idea of her dating. Not because I don't trust her, but because I know how teenage boys think. But I also know I can't stop time. All I can do is keep my eyes open, let her know I'm here if she ever needs me, and pray that she's got enough of her mom's sense and my stubbornness to stand up for herself when she needs to. Not gonna lie, though. First time she brings a boy home, I might just have to sit on the porch cleaning my shotgun. Just for effect. You have been listening to episode 190, Sitting with Someone. The Stop Go Stop podcast is produced by John Wanzel. From Chicago to your ears, thank you for listening.